Logan versus Commonwealth, Joseph B. McCracken, Assistant Public Defender, Appellants Counsel, Craig W. Stallard, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Appellees Counsel.
Good morning.
Counsel for the appellant may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Justices. I'm Barry McCracken. I'm here on behalf of Quartrez Logan. Mr. Logan was convicted in Norfolk Circuit Court of an attempted possession of a firearm while under protective order, which is a misdemeanor. Basically, this comes on appeal from an en banc decision of the Court of Appeals. The issue is whether or not the certificate of service on the extension of a ex parte protective order constituted basically testimonial hearsay such that the protections of the Sixth Amendment should have been afforded to Mr. Logan. Quite simply, the statement itself, there's no contest. The statement is hearsay and likely would be admissible on a hearsay challenge under state rules of evidence. But the question becomes, is it testimonial, which is the litmus test for whether hearsay affords an individual the right to confront and cross-examine a witness he hadn't had an opportunity to confront in the past about the statement if the individual was not available for trial. None of that is before the court. There's no issue here of unavailability. It's simply a question of whether or not this type, this particular type of certificate of service should have been considered testimonial in nature. The court below basically, you know, was a plurality decision with a concurring, the two judges concurring and three judges dissenting. Essentially, the concurrence and the plurality really agreed on the initial analysis of this document. And they both relied on the determination that the document was not testimonial because it was not created for a primary purpose of use at trial, but rather was merely, as they said, a recordation of a mere administrative act by the deputy sheriff who reportedly did the service. Basically, our position is that is an overly restrictive view of the way that particular rule should apply under Melendez-Diaz and, of course, Crawford v. Washington.
Counsel, really, this is Mr. McCracken. This is Justice Kelsey. May I ask you this? The Court of Appeals in footnote 7 said that the Ninth Circuit, the Arizona High Court, the Massachusetts High Court, the California High Court, the Oregon High Court have all agreed.
I'm sorry, I lost you, Judge.
Yeah, I see that. The footnote 7, as you're familiar, in the plurality opinion, lists the different jurisdictions that have ruled on this. And their legal, the Court of Appeals legal research determined that all of the courts, the Arizona Court, the Ninth Circuit Court, the California Court, the Massachusetts Court, the Oregon Court, and as recently as about a month ago, citing the in-bank Court of Appeals opinion, the Supreme Court of Colorado, have all held that return of services are not testimonial. Do you have any appellate court decisions contradicting that?
No, sir, and I think it's noted in my brief specifically. I didn't list all the ones that were listed in the court's opinion, nor in the footnote, nor in Mr. Stallard's brief. You know, there are, basically this has been decided on a number of occasions by other jurisdictions, and once again, our position is that those are not controlling, and that what we have to look at in dealing with this issue is this court's decision in Crawford v. Commonwealth from 2017. All of these, first off, not all of these cases dealt with the specific type of service we have in this particular case. It is unique because it is service of a ex parte order. The order itself is a legal nullity until the service is actually effected, and of course it's not enforceable, and the defendant has been served, and he has noticed that the order is in effect. Not all of these cases dealt with that type of service. Several of them did. most specifically the Massachusetts case, and I'm not going to cite it by name. I have a harder time sometimes these days remembering my name.
Well, let me just ask you a very common sense question instead of a doctrinal question. What's the primary purpose of a return of service? What is the, not the secondary purpose or the tertiary purpose or the possible purpose? What's the primary purpose of a return of service?
Well, in this case, it's to give the order legal effect and provide notice to the defendant. Because that is the primary purpose. And once again, we're relying, and you know from my brief, and I know you've read it, I know you probably disagree with it at this point in time, and my hope is to convince you to a contrary conclusion. But this particular document falls in the category of that third category, as Judge Huff said in the dissent below. It is a specific aspect of service of process. And interestingly enough, the two cases, the Massachusetts case, the Indiana case cited, I cited the Massachusetts case in my brief. Ms. Stollard cited the Indiana case in his, as well as the Massachusetts case. Both of those dealt with this specific type of ex parte order. Interestingly enough, in making their ruling, they said its sole purpose was not for later use in a primary purpose, was not for use in a later trial, that it also served ministerial purpose. So, when talking about primary purposes, that's the over-restrictive part of the interpretation. And I understand courts do not wish to put a position where service of process can routinely be called to question, so they have the duty to bring a process server in to testify in every case where that might become some type of issue. That's not what's involved here. This is a particular beast that we're dealing with. And its primary purpose was not just to record the fact, but was to give that document legal efficacy and to put the defendant on notice. And without that, the order's not enforceable. The order is not even an order. It doesn't become an order under the code until service has been effected. And again, this comes back, and we're relying, like I said, I understand that the case is coming out of all the other jurisdictions that I'm aware of. If I, rest assured, Justice, if I had found a case that basically took the position that I am taking, I would have put that squarely in the top of my brief. I didn't do that because I haven't found one. However, just because there are a number of jurisdictions that have ruled contrary, they're not binding on this court. And what is pretty much binding on this court is Crawford versus Commonwealth. And Crawford versus Commonwealth, the primary purpose for the affidavit in Crawford v. Commonwealth was not for criminal prosecution. It was not part of an ongoing investigation. It was an affidavit to obtain a protective order. In that case, I believe it was an ex parte protective order. So it wasn't police asking the questions. It wasn't something that was done as part of an ongoing emergency investigation that Ohio v. Clark and Bryant v. Michigan or Davis versus Washington were involved in. It was a primary purpose was to obtain a protective order, not for criminal prosecution. But this court said it fell in category 3 of the Washington v. Commonwealth cases. Specifically, any reasonable deputy who was serving that document, particularly given all the circumstances, including that warning right below his certificate that this could be used to prosecute an individual who basically obtained or possessed a firearm after it had been served, would expect that this would be reasonably available or further prosecution.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
This is Justice Mims. I want to go to the other Crawford versus Washington, let me tell you right from the start, this will be a question that is polite but not friendly. When Crawford v. Washington came down in 2004, I was teaching evidence at George Mason Law School, and my first reaction was, well, that's interesting. And I was also serving in the Virginia Senate, where we had to deal with certificates of analysis and the cost to the Commonwealth of complying with Crawford v. Washington, and my reaction was not, that's interesting. My reaction was, oh, no. And so this question goes beyond the constitutionality issue to the practicality issue. And my question is, under certificates of service, where is the limiting principle? Where we have to decide not only your case, but now this potentially opens the door for any number of certificates of service. And how do we determine, as a matter of practicality, which ones involve a constitutional question, which ones don't? Where do we draw the line?
Well, in justice, all questions I get in this court have always been polite. There's nothing personal in any of our discussions. I understand the Commonwealth made that, if not a focal point, certainly was one of Mr. Stallard's points in his brief that, hey, this could open Pandora's box. And to a certain extent, let's face it, Crawford, we were building over 40 years of some idea about what constituted a confrontation clause issue and what didn't. And Crawford v. Washington basically turned a lot of that jurisprudence on its head. And we're in the process, you know, we're what, 15 years in or 14 years in now, and we're still in the process of trying to decide where we draw those lines you're talking about. I think that, as I said, because this is a particular aspect of a service of process, this deals with ex parte orders, and I think it has to be examined in that guise, not as to generally all service of process. Generally speaking, service of process in a criminal case is going to be a non-issue. And the dissent below pointed that out. This really, you know, when we're talking about it, we have to look at this for what's on the table here, not what could be on the table in other cases. The ex parte orders create a significant problem because the individual wasn't present, didn't have an opportunity to participate in the proceedings. His attorney wasn't there. It was all done out of his presence. He wasn't even aware that there was a proceeding going on and an order is issued. And until he served with it, he has no ability to comply with the order or to comply with the aspect of the Virginia Code that criminalizes conduct based on the fact that that order is in existence. And that does change the posture here, and it does, I think, pull this document out of the general idea about deputy sheriffs doing ministerial duties and brings it into Category 3 of the Crawford, the Washington cases, just like the affidavit in Crawford v. Commonwealth. I know they're different kind of documents, but I don't think there's a distinction to be had on how to draw the line. And I guess, I see I've got 2 minutes left, and I'm going to try to keep those if I can. I'll simply close by noting, would it change anything if code required the deputy sheriff's service to be notarized? And, you know, the Commonwealth made some notice about this, but this certificate is just as much a solemn statement of a occurrence of a fact as any affidavit. And on that, I'll try to keep my minute and 42 seconds in case Mr. Starlin says something I think I need to respond to. Thank you so much.
All right, Mr. Starlin.
You're muted.
You've muted yourself.
My apologies. May it please the court, my name is Craig Stallard on behalf of the Commonwealth. As the court has noted, the Court of Appeals decision is consistent with every other court that has addressed this issue or even an analogous issue, both in state and federal courts. And while those cases are not controlling on this case, I think it's important to note that each of those other cases rely on United States Supreme Court precedent. They cite to both Crawford, Michigan v. Bryant, Ohio v. Clark, for the authority and reasoning that they apply in those cases and reach the conclusion I'm asking this court to reach as well. As the primary purpose of this document was to fulfill the administrative functions of the court as required by the Code of Virginia and the Rules of Court. They were not prepared in anticipation of litigation. As the Court of Appeals noted, regardless of Mr. The defendant's case, regardless of his future criminal activity, this document would have been created. So it's
Mr.
difficult
Stollard,
to... Yes,
Mr.
Your
Stollard,
Honor.
Address the argument that opposing counsel makes with regard to Crawford versus Commonwealth as to whether that case would indicate that you look at whether someone would reasonably, the declarant would reasonably expect the document to be used prosecutorially.
Well, Your Honor, in the Crawford case, we were dealing with an affidavit which recorded past criminal conduct. That would be a materially different situation than what the court is looking at today. And the court in that case actually did a primary purpose analysis and determined that that was, in fact, a recordation of past criminal acts and therefore was testimonial. It ultimately decided that the omission of that document was harmless. But this court did engage in the primary purpose analysis of that. Here we're dealing merely with the recordation of service of a order by court. It does not record any past criminal activities, does not anticipate any type of litigation. It is merely giving notice to the defendant that this order has been entered so that he is able to comply with it, and that return of service was sent to the court as required by the Code of Virginia. So I don't believe that the Crawford v. Commonwealth is in any way inconsistent with the position I'm asking this court to take in this case. And I believe, again, the authorities in the other courts and the reasoning applied in those cases should apply in this case as well, and the Court of Appeals did not err. As Justice Mims alluded to, I think there would be a difficulty in limiting this case if Mr. Logan's case was to prevail. On page 17 of my brief, I cited a case, State versus King, in which the defendant in that case was indicating that, well, when a judge entered this order, which is now being used to establish one of the elements of the offense, that was clearly anticipated to be used in future litigation, and therefore that's testimonially hearsay, and we should have testimony on that. The court in Arizona denied that, and this court should do that as well by saying that these types of documents, the primary purpose is not dealing with future litigation, but merely administrative functions, and as such do not constitute testimonially hearsay. And if the court has no additional questions, I'd ask the court to affirm the Court of Appeals.
All right. Mr. McCracken, you have a minute 39.
Let me see if I can get unmuted. In any event, I'll try to be meaningfully brief. The problem with the Attorney General's argument is when you look at Crawford v. Commonwealth, what it said was they did a primary purpose analysis, and they said the primary purpose was not for subsequent use in a criminal prosecution. It was to obtain the immediate purpose, and its primary purpose was to obtain the protective order that was sought. What it said was...
This is Justice Kelsey again. May I interrupt you? But the Crawford versus Commonwealth case was making an accusation of criminality to the court, seeking a relief based upon an accusation of criminality. Does the return of service accuse the person served of anything?
I don't think that's what the test is, Your Honor. I respect it, but what I'm pointing out is that I understand that was a significance, but what the court said in Crawford, the Commonwealth, was that it fell in that third category of documents in Crawford v. Washington. That is, it was something that an objective witness would reasonably understood would be available for a criminal prosecution, not that it was part of a criminal prosecution itself, and not that it was the primary purpose for which the document had been created. And that's why Crawford v. Commonwealth is controlled precedent in this case, and it should be followed. And this particular type of service of process, I would submit, should give rise to protections under the 6th and 14th Amendment Confrontation Clause. And again, I I greatly appreciate the court's attention, and always it's always nice to be here, even sometimes when I'm not at my best.
Thank you very much. Your time has expired. The clerk will call the next case.